Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today for another edition of Garden Talk. Here in studio, Mike Maddox, Rye County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and the Director of Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. Mike, it's a pleasure to see you.
Hey, good to see you too.
And I'll turn your microphone up so people can hear you. And Barbara Larson is also here, Horticulture Educator with Kenosha County UW Extension at Bristol. Barbara, pleasure to see you again.
Thank you very much, and happy spring.
Thank you. Today is the first day of spring, and you mentioned just before the show started that when the temperature hit the high 60s or the low 70s a few days ago, you started to get some phone calls, some gardeners who were anxious to get out and get working.
It certainly did. I think everybody starts to look at these warm temperatures, and particularly now in southern Wisconsin, where we're getting into the upper 50s and low 60s on the unusual days. I know that's still not normal. Everybody starts calling and asking all sorts of gardening questions because we're all anxious to get outside and into the gardens and enjoy the weather.
Was that the same response on your phone, Mike?
Yes, most definitely. A lot of grass questions. Why is my lawn brown? Japanese beetle questions already. Blue spruce questions. Yeah, they're starting to come in.
Yeah. All right. And if you have questions, we'd be happy to entertain them. All you have to do is give us a call in Madison, or rather, I should say the number is 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. It appears the emerald ash borer is infecting more trees and has been on the move in Wisconsin from its previous southeastern Wisconsin location. Mike, what do we know so far about that?
I know that. I usually defer to Barb on these questions. We have with UW Extension, the horticulture team, we have a working group. And Barb's is on that, so I would be remiss if I was to steal her thunder right now.
Okay. Emerald ash borer, as the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection recently came out with a statement within the last couple of weeks that they finished their survey work in Washington and Ozaukee counties in that area, in the Newburgh area, and they did find that there is a fairly large, several-mile infestation in that area, and that it was also probably about 5 years old. They still don't know why, where the original source was, or anything like that, but they are looking at particularly just keeping things, they hope, in that immediate area. Mm-hmm. Now, coming from Kenosha, they also found one in Kenosha, a couple of infested trees late summer. Everything, all the follow-up on that, because those were trees that were actually brought in from Illinois. They weren't supposed to be brought in, and they caught them after the adults would have been out flying, which would be more early to midsummer, and so they're not concerned that there was any spread from those. However, that area has been closely checked, and they did not find anything else. And then, of course, they're going to trap and also keep a close eye on that immediate area in the coming year. So I guess the take home for most people is to just be very careful, as we're hearing and seeing on billboards and everything. You know, don't move firewood. Be very careful. Don't purchase trees in out of state and bring them in. And be aware, very aware of what's going on. If you have any of the symptoms in your ash trees, and it's only ash, not mountain ash, you know, things like the lots of lobe growth on the trunks, they're very small holes in it. Any of those kinds of questions, there is, you either call your local extension office, or there are also helpline numbers for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, too.
We're talking with Mike Maddox and Barbara Larson, and we'll take some calls, and we'll start off with Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, now that you brought that up, too, what is the origin of that bug, the emerald ash borer, where did it come from?
It's native to Asia. And interestingly, I just recently saw a presentation by Chris Bachtel from the Morton Arboretum, and he's actually been to Asia looking for trees that are resistant to emerald ash borer. And they found what they think is a Manchurian ash that they may be able to work with in crossing with some of our native ashes and may be able to get a little bit of resistance in it. But of course, like things like Dutch elm disease, that it's now taken, what, 40 years in order for them to develop something that we can replant elms. It may take many years in order to do that and get a breeding program going.
Okay, now to my original question. Now, I like vine plant. Well, vines like melons and pumpkins and watermelon and squash. Now, if once the flower is produced and it's starting to fruit, if I cut out the, will I get better production? If I cut the leader vine, will I get better production on that? And I'll hang up and listen to my answer. Thank you.
I don't know why you would. Let's keep it simple and not go trying to do some pruning of your vine crops. I don't know. I don't do it in the garden. I don't know anybody who does. I think it's just going to be better for ample production is just make sure you follow through with regular watering. Keep things composted or fertilized if needed, and just be at Mother Nature's mercy. I do not know of if pruning your vine crops would reallocate energy into your fruit. In fact, it may lessen it because you're removing some of the green tissue that would be feeding the developing fruit. So I would say don't do that.
All right, Dave, there's your advice. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Gary in Houghton next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a new garden, and I want to put in lasagna beds, and I was wondering what would be the best things to transplant into that, and what things do I have to wait a year on?
Boy, you know what? When did you put your lasagna bed in? And you want to explain to people? Because I bet they don't know what a lasagna garden is. I do, but you want to tell them what it is?
Well, I'm putting it in now.
Oh, okay. You're doing it now. All right. Then I would think, and a lasagna bed is where you actually layer compost and newspapers and sometimes leaves and all those kinds of things. And the idea is that you actually build up a layer of very good high quality soil on the top, and then you can plant into that. Usually that's done in fall or late summer. So I'm thinking, you're still in the process where it's kind of decomposing and working down. I don't know how much you'd want to put in that, although you could probably maybe try some, you're looking at annuals or vegetables or?
Vegetables and, the new trees, landscaping that I'm doing too. It's basically just mulching for them. But for the vegetables.
Okay. Well, you try a little bit, but I think you're going to have to watch with your fertilization on that. You may have to add a little bit of more nitrogen with it. As I said, normally that kind of thing is done more in the fall as a prep for the coming year. So give it a try. A lot of gardening is just trial and error anyway.
All right. Thank you. Uh-huh.
Okay. And if he Googles lasagna bed, lasagna gardening,
sure.
He's going to get a diagram and everything, I suppose.
Right. Right.
I'm sure some great recipes, too.
Okay. With a nice sauce.
Yeah.
Mark in Muscadet is next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. We've got evergreen shrubs around our house. I'm not sure the variety. They're 3 to 4 feet tall. And the tops are all burnt from the winter. And I notice it in some of their yards. Different people have some are burnt and some aren't. How low can I cut them? And is now the time to do it?
A lot of your green mustaches around the house can suffer from winter burn. It's because of them being evergreens, and we're talking junipers, yews, what else?
Yeah, arborvitae will do it too.
Yeah. Because they keep their needles on all winter long, they may lose the moisture from those leaves, but because the roots are frozen, unable to move moisture up to replenish it, thus they brown out. As for how low can you go, it depends.
Yeah, and, you know, this is in the, I would really like to have you take a sample into, of the green part into your local extension office so that they can identify what the plant is before we tell you how to prune it. Because there's a huge variation on the way you would prune things like junipers than the way you can prune yews. Yews will take a lot more pruning than something like a juniper will. So get it identified first, and they can probably then tell you and give you a fact sheet on how to prune it correctly too. Yeah.
And one of the one of those things with all those types of shrubs is a lot of times they'll develop a green shell on the outside and a brown interior, especially if they've been on your property for decades, you know, an old plant on there. And when you do a lot of pruning on those and remove the green and expose that brown inner shell, it may not regrow. So I'd take a picture and with you too, so whoever you're showing it to can get a better understanding of what the, your situation is.
Yep, good idea.
Okay, very good. Thank
Mark, thanks very much for the call. We're talking today on Garden Talk with Mike Maddox of Rock County UW Extension, Barbara Larson, who is with Kenosha County UW Extension. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number for you is 800-642-1234. And Roger is next in Sauk County. Hello, Roger.
Hi. I do lasagna gardening, and I'm calling with an answer to the guy's question.
Oh, great.
When you put a lasagna garden together, depending on the material you have, you know, you might have some drier material, you might have some wetter material. So the most important thing, particularly doing it now, if you want to plant for this season, is to either we get a bunch of rain or put some sprinklers on. You need to get all of that material hydrated. And then once it gets wet, it's going to heat up. It might get to be 80 degrees. It might get to be 120 degrees. That'll take 1 to 3 weeks. Once it's cooled down, he can plant anything into it that he wants to for this season.
Okay.
And if you want, I have a website where people can look at pictures of this if you want me to tell that.
What is that?
That it's a MySpace account. So it's myspace.com/ it's Our Farm Wisconsin. So it's OurFarmWi. I did this last year on sand in the Wisconsin River Valley, and 2 weeks later planted and had a fantastic garden.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And hey, Roger, we need to talk about that workshop.
Okay. Get in touch.
Will do.
Yeah, Mike leaned over and says, I know who this is.
Roger, thanks very much for the call. And let's go to Tom next in Nina. Tom, what can we do for you?
Hi there. We have like a half an acre for our backyard. It's all fenced in for the dogs. And last fall, we had a drain system put in, a drain tile system put in. So right now, there's a lot of mud back there. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, when is a good time for us to start planting our grass seed?
It needs to warm up a little bit. The best time to plant grass is actually late summer. Because the ground's nice and warm, you can put your grass seed down, and it's going to germinate really fast. And so that is technically the best time. Otherwise, if you're wanting to do it this spring, it's going to depend on how the spring goes. But we're going to look to, I'm going to say, after April 15th, probably into May. Mm-hmm. We want soil temperatures to be warmed up a little bit more. The seed's going to take longer to germinate during that time because it's going to be cooler. And your dogs are going to make it difficult, too, if you don't keep them off of it.
Yeah, and I've been through this. I've put in a lawn in the spring with dogs, and you do have to take them for a walk or keep them off of it until, probably a good 6 weeks to 2 months afterwards to get that new lawn and new grass established. And the other key for establishing a new lawn from seed is you have to keep that seed moist. And if you don't keep it moist, it's not going to germinate properly. Bluegrass takes a good 3 weeks for it to germinate. So those are the real keys to it.
And you can use a light straw mulch. Don't smother it, but just enough to keep the moisture on. They also have hydro seeding techniques in which you can have somebody come in, spray your yard, and seed and mulch. And there's a lot of other things you can get from your local garden center. We also have a really good publication on our UW Extension website on starting new lawns. And if you can go to your extension office or go to that website, and that'll give you a lot of the details you may need.
You recall the website?
Yeah, it's learningstore, all one word, .uwex.edu, and the publication, I don't remember the number, but it's called Establish and Renovating Your Lawn. Guess what? I sent something out this week. That's how I remember all that. So, yeah, that's a great publication. It'll help you out.
Good luck to you, Tom.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Had an email from Denise in Soldiers Grove who said someone once suggested planting castor beans in or near my vegetable garden, but I don't remember why. Can it grow in southwest Wisconsin if she lives near Soldiers Grove?
Well, I use castor beans in my garden. I use them for the ornamental appeal. I don't know anything about what kind of interaction they have with the other plants other than you have to remember that castor beans, the actual seed itself, is ricin. It's the bioweapon. Mm-hmm. That was the big deal a couple years ago about in Las Vegas. So the seed pods that form from that can be poisonous, but I've never had that as a concern. You know, we grow them at Rotary Botanical Gardens all the time. We'll cut them off if they're accessible, but otherwise we're only growing them for ornamental appeal. I haven't heard of anything else. Have you?
No, I haven't either, and I've only seen them used for ornamental purposes, mm-hmm. and I don't know that I'd want them next to a vegetable garden. Just, you know, I don't think it hurt it, but I, you know, if you like them, you know, but I don't know that I put it next to a vegetable garden. I have no reason.
Somebody also wondered about squash beetles, had them last summer. What can they do to prevent them this growing season?
I'm dealing with the same problem. We're going to be going to more floating row covers and trying those. I got those on order. And what that's basically going to be cheesecloth that once the fruit starts to form and we can see the flowers been pollinated, we're going to come in and try covering them up to keep just the beetles off. And that's going to be our attempt. Otherwise, there are insecticides labeled for that use. You just have to go to the garden center and read the labels on the back and find the one you want.
Mm-hmm. This is Garden Talk. Our guests today, Mike Maddox and Barbara Larson. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Mike Maddox and Barbara Larson are our guests today. And if people have some lilies, what should they be doing to get ready for the upcoming season?
Well, I guess I'm not sure what if it's daylilies you're talking about. My daylilies in the Beloit area, which is where I live, are just barely coming up, and they actually got a little frost damage from, but they'll be perfectly fine. You know, the daylilies, regular lilies, are pretty easy ones to plant. That's why I like them.
I've had daylilies where my neighbor's given them to me in the fall, and being the lazy gardener that I am, I've dropped them right in the middle of the garden and left them all winter long, and they've grown the next year on top of the ground. So as for daylilies, I don't think you need to do anything. They'll probably thrive from being ignored.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff in Clintonville is next. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I have a problem with what the locals call box elder trees. I think it's a variety of maple. Mm-hmm. I have trim these things with everything from a hand pruner to a chainsaw, and it seems like they come back even stronger every spring. I'm trying not to, you know, do any harsh chemicals on them, but any ideas? I'm feeling pretty frustrated with the box elder invasion personally.
Well, you can get a bulldozer and push them out. That's a good chemical-free way of doing it.
Yeah, with a chain and pull the root systems out. That would be the only chemical-free way I can think of, too.
Think of them as really large dandelions. You're going to have to get them out root and all in order for those to go. Box elder trees, you were right, they are a type of maple, and they're going to self-seed everywhere, and they're going to grow everywhere. So if you're wanting to do it chemically free, one, catch them when they're small so you can yank them out. But if you leave them for any amount of time, they're going to get sizable and be very difficult to remove. And if you don't get all that root system, they're going to stump sucker really easily.
Okay, not exactly the news I wanted, but I'll try the method. Thanks, folks.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, and of course our email address, talk@wpr.org. On Garden Talk, let's go to Jim in Menominee next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I have some ferns that always come up and look really nice and pretty until they get about 18 inches, 2 feet tall, and then they start getting brown on the tips. They originally were coming up in a very sunny spot, and so I transplanted them to a more shady place that's mostly shade with a little sun coming through, and it still happens.
How do you have fairly sandy soil, or...?
Yeah, it's kind of sandy.
Yeah, yeah. They're just drying out. You need to, I would think where they would kind of normally be, or at least these probably would be in a fairly high organic soil with a lot of, not wet, but pretty moist soils around them. So I would keep them mulched. I would, which should help a lot now that you've moved them into the shade. So that's probably the key thing. And you may want to water them regularly.
Well, I thought I was doing that enough, but maybe I just need a lot more. So
yeah, especially if you're on a sandy soil, you're probably going to have to water more often.
Put down about 2 inches of a mulch, some sort of wood chips, and that might be enough to help you. But then if you do notice that browning to start, come in with a good soaking of about 2 inches of water or so about every 2 weeks should help them out.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much. Appreciate hearing from you. And we'll go to Jean in Ashland next. Hi, Jean.
Hi. As a child, I was taught what I could nibble on in the garden and what I could absolutely not nibble on. Some years ago, I asked the county agricultural agent if he had a list of poisonous plants that I could just avoid planting, be there vegetable or flower plants. Types of plants. Anyway, it is available. I think you found it on the internet. Those lists are available to avoid if you want to have your children enjoy nibbling and growing their own vegetables.
The university, Cornell has a website, and if you type in Cornell poisonous plant database, you can jump to that real easy. That's the reference guide I use for just a list of plants with some sort of toxicity to them. When people do call and ask, is this poisonous? That's usually my reference.
You can get a whole big long list.
Oh, they have a multiple page list out there for you.
Very good.
All right. Thanks a lot, Gene. And what was that?
It was done by Cornell, and I always do it as a Google search. I should bookmark it, but.
So Google
Cornell poison plant database. Yeah.
Okay. And then parents will have that list. Let's go to Doug next in Trevor. Hello, Doug.
Hey, morning. Hey, I had a question. I've been using, we have two lakes down here in Kenosha County. They cut the weeds. They cut a bunch of them. And I've been going over there and using those like on a mulch around my vegetables and also mixing them with the compost. There's shells and slimy stuff, little fish. Should I be concerned about the, you know, like the pollution from the motorboats and stuff? Do you think there'd be any kind of high levels of, I don't know what, there isn't fuel, benzene or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know that the lakes are that bad or dirty and polluted in the Kenosha area.
I don't see it being any worse than the cars driving by your house.
Yeah.
So you have no problem doing that with your garden?
No, I wouldn't have a problem with it. The only thing I would be concerned about is getting seeds for invasive plants and bringing some of those in my garden. So I'd kind of want to know, either get it well composted or at least have some idea of what I was cutting and bringing in.
Okay, yeah, the Camp and Center Lake, you know the area,
yeah,
Barbara.
Yeah.
They do that on their own, and it is all lake weeds. I mean, they're doing the milfoil, but I'm not concerned about the lake weeds taking off in my garden.
In your garden, so. No, that's fine.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate hearing from you, Doug. And we've got a couple lines open. If you have a question along gardening lines that you'd like answered, the number is 1-800-642-1234. As we go to Black Creek and to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I started a patch of lingonberries, and I've looked at the berries, and some of the bushes that are growing, some are, all the leaves are brown and some are green, and I'm just wondering what happens. I know if they, produce rhizomes and new plants come up from that, but are they supposed to lose all the leaves on the woody material and then leaf out, or how does that work?
Well, the little bit I remember with lingonberries, and I've actually tried them in like a demonstration garden before, and they don't grow in southern Wisconsin because they're a northern, very northern species, and they're related to blueberries and cranberries and those kinds of things. So I guess I would be concerned about maybe you had some winter death or not cold necessarily, but drying in it. This is one of those that I think you just kind of wait and see. You know, there's a lot of, especially this time of year, where what we need to do is kind of be patient and see what comes back. But if you, you know, kind of scratch the stem and see that that's still green, yeah, I'm sure they'll rebud. You'll get new leaves on it.
The woody part is supposed to rebud.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, and they will come up from rhizomes too.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
Both that.
Right.
Okay, I was concerned that, I wasn't sure if it just always started from rhizomes or new each year.
You keep an above-ground woody part.
Okay. Well, do they bloom on, what part do they fruit on?
This comes down to, we don't grow this in my neck of the woods. But there should be some good references on it. I don't know that we've got any of our Wisconsin publications on lingonberries. I don't remember seeing it. But
I don't recall any either.
But I'm sure there are some references that will tell you more about growing lingonberries.
Okay, I'll try to.
Okay,
right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
All right, Gary, thank you very much. We had an email earlier from someone who wanted to know about the best ground preparation and planting method for three apple trees that they'd ordered but has not yet arrived. Two are semi-dwarf, one is standard. Any special planting techniques?
Well, I know when it comes to your ornamental trees, it's all about getting the root flare at the natural soil grade, and I don't believe in amending the soil on that either. But our old former fruit specialist who's gone on to bigger and better things once told me to take everything you know about arboriculture and you do the opposite for fruit trees. So I don't think I could bring myself to planting one too deep.
Right. Well, I think most of these are grafted, so what you want to make sure is you want to keep the graft above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But we do think that does fit with regular trees is that you basically want to plant back into the same soil you took out. So unless you're doing huge beds, you know, where you're doing big differences, you're not going to change it. You just make a nice big hole. Should be at least twice the width of the root ball. It should be dish-shaped, and then make sure that when you get your trees, you actually spread those roots out so that they'll continue to go in an outward fashion.
Do not add soil amendments. You want to use the soil native to the site. Don't add fertilizers. You're going to have enough nutrients in the area, for the most part, to give that tree what it needs for its initial growth. Backfill, you know, put the soil from that site back into the hole, breaking up in your hand to loosen it around and tuck it in around those roots. Give it a good watering, stake it. That's going to be critical. And then put some mulch over the top of it. You've loosened all that soil. You might get erosion. It'll help suppress weeds and it'll help keep moisture in there too. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple.
We also had an email from Paul in Grafton who has about 8,000 to 10,000 square feet of perennial, native, and ornamental grass planting beds. For years, I've used a hedge trimmer to cut the dead vegetation into small pieces and left those pieces on the beds. This year, I'd like to add some composted manure. How do I go about looking for a seller for that quantity of composted manure?
I think you go onto public radio and you make the announcement there.
You could also call your local office. Particularly the agriculture agents are aware of some farmers that might have that kind
of
thing.
Sure, they're clued into mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sure garden centers or anybody in the landscape industry can have access to compost and that by the yard where you can get it in by the truckload in order to spread it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones to Jenny in Moline, Illinois. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
How are you today?
Just fine, thanks. Yes, I've got a weed in our lawn that's been identified as nutsedge. I researched it a bit on the internet, and apparently it's extremely aggressive, and it's gotten progressively worse over the last couple of years, and apparently it's a tuber of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what chemical to use on it, but it's gotten a lot worse the last couple of years, and it's just taking over.
Yeah, if it makes you feel better, I have it too. Yeah, and when I did my research on it as well, it's something as simple as glyphosate, the active ingredient in products such as Roundup, is said to work on it, though I debate that. I don't see a lot of efficacy. So what I'm trying to pull it, but I know darn well that I'm not pulling up all the tuber, so it's coming back, and I'm trying to smother it with mulch, and I'm also trying to smother it with other plants. I'm learning to live with it.
Yeah, and this is in your lawn?
It's in our lawn, and it's way above the grass line.
Yeah.
It's so pervasive that we can't pull it. It's just too pervasive,
right.
You know?
There are some specialty herbicides that are designed for nutsedge, and without, you know, Mike and I sit here without any references, so I don't have those references in front of me. But since you're from Moline, I know there's an extension office in Illinois too, and in fact, I know there's a publication and a turfgrass specialist that's written information about what chemicals you can use for nutsedge control. I do remember, though, that in order to control nutsedge, that those chemicals are kind of hard on your regular turf grass, too. So really carefully follow label directions and in order to use it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So call your Illinois office.
Yeah, I think I remember looking at that publication, too, and my take-home message was glyphosate was about the only thing I had access to without killing everything. And we all know that kills everything. Yeah.
Our guests today on Garden Talk are Mike Maddox, who's the Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and Barbara Larson, who is the Kenosha County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. And you're invited to join us on Garden Talk. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And we're going back to Ann in Menominee Falls. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Yes, I a few months ago, moved to a new place, and there's a mature arborvita screen-type hedge around the edges of this deck, and it's at least 10 feet high, and I'm wondering if I can, I like the idea of some of the privacy with it, but it's so tall, it really blocks my view of the sky, and I'm wondering, can I safely have those reduced down to, say, 5 feet?
Yeah, you can have them reduced down, but they're going to look ugly. This is one of those shrubs that I talked about earlier, that it gets like the brown center when it gets really old, and they get kind of scraggly. If you cut them down and show that bald spot, they may not regrow to fill that in. And so now you're left with short, scraggly bushes with a big brown spot in the middle.
Well, and arborvitas can be reduced in size as long as you keep within the green area, which means you can bring them down. You'd want to reshape the sides, though, because otherwise you end up with this weird flat top looking thing that even if it's green, it's still weird looking. And the other thing you need to remember is if they are 10 feet tall and they're already too tall for you, these things will get much larger than this. So what you may be better off is, instead of putting all that money into pruning these, thinking about what would work better and stay the size, give you the effect, but stay the right size for you.
Yeah. You mean have these taken out and plant something else?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. Actually, our foundation plants or screening plants, a lot of times they do have a lifetime, you know, where it's time for them to go. They've outgrown their spot. We've had better specimens come along. We have new dwarf and garden-sized ones that you can replace them with. And they're going to be less maintenance in the long run, and you'll probably be happier with them, too.
Yeah.
So it's okay to let go of them.
Yeah, well, I think they must have been planted in the mid to late 80s, given the age of the place I'm at.
Yeah,
Well, that's a decision that you'll have to make, and good luck to you. And thanks very much for the call. And again, if you'd like to join in, it's 800-642-1234. I know that, Mike, you have a spring gardening symposium coming up next
weekend. On March 28th, I have a spring garden symposium. I have four wonderful speakers, and I'm also all full up. So I'm having to play hardball, and I'm turning people away from it. But we will be doing it again next year. This was our sixth annual one, and we will repeat it. And already I'm looking forward to next year. I have an idea what the topic is going to be, but I'm not going to spill the beans.
And Barb, yours was last
week. We had mine last week, and like Mike's, it was we weren't turning people away this year. We did last year. We moved to a new location this year, but we were basically almost full to capacity. So great interest in gardening, and that's wonderful. It's wonderful to have people so interested. What I would suggest is if you are looking for a gardening program, many of the extension county extension offices and master gardener groups throughout the state do similar kinds of programs.
Most definitely.
And so give your local county office a call and they will refer you either to theirs or something else. And as obviously as you go farther north, they'll be a little bit later. I do know that there's one in Walworth County tomorrow. So and I believe they still have a little room. So if you're in the Walworth area, you may want to give the Walworth County Extension Office a call today.
Your former colleague Ed Lyon was in. He was talking about the symposium that he's putting on at, I can't think of the name of...
Here in town. Olbrich.
At Olbrich Gardens on edible vegetables.
Yeah, that had a really good response. And I actually think Mark Dwyer, the director of horticulture...
Is one of the...
At Rotary, was one of the speakers. I think that happened already.
Oh, it has?
Yeah, there has... Right now, there's a huge interest in eating right now, especially growing your own food. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Barb about this before we came on show. I did a community garden workshop in February, and I was expecting maybe 20 local people to show up for it. I had 60. They were coming as far away as Indiana. They were coming from the mid part of Wisconsin down. There is a huge interest in about community gardens, shared vegetable space, growing your own food right now because of the economy, because of food safety.
Yeah, I just actually saw a research report that said, you know, most of us think it's the economy, and that's certainly a big part of people's renewed interest in vegetable gardening. But even more important was this food safety issues, knowing where it's coming from, that it's local, that you know what's on it, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, so there's been a strong resurgence in this for the last 5 years, if not longer. It's just right now with some really good books and other information being put out there, it's really hot right now about it. Your food is food security and vegetable gardens and such.
Let's go to Jane in Monona next. Hello, Jane.
Hello, and thank you for this excellent program. Mm-hmm. I have about 12 or so big bags of oak leaves that were collected last fall, and I use them around the perimeter of my house for insulation. And I wonder if anybody can use those in the garden. Are they a good mulch? I have heard that gardens don't like oak leaves, and I would like some information. And if anybody would like to take these, I would be more than happy to donate them. The bags are new.
I'm thinking I want them.
So do I. Can we fight? We'll arm wrestle for them. So what does that tell you about what we think about oak leaves? With Mike and I both would like oak leaves. It's a very common misconception that oak leaves will really throw off your soil and make it too acidic. Not true. If you're blessed with leaves, any kind, including oak leaves, use them. They're great for your garden.
You know, people talk about their tannins or other contents. I have an oak tree. I want to take my neighbor's oak leaves. I use them as a mulch. You know, they naturally mulch the forest floor where oaks grow. And look at all the other stuff growing down there. So, yes, oak leaves are great. I think we just have to interject here. The only leaf you ever need to be somewhat cautious of would be walnut. And that's because some things don't like walnut leaves. Yeah. Walnut produces juglone. Juglone's a toxin that may kill your tomatoes or give other plants problems. So leaves of all plants are good. Be cautious with walnuts.
Can I leave my telephone number or will I be swamped?
I don't think we want to put it on the air.
No. Typically what works out well is if you drag them to your curb and put down free leaves, give them 48 hours.
Oh, all right. Good idea.
Okay.
Thank
well,
you.
We will take your number just in case here, Jane. Hold on just a moment, please. You've got that taken care of. All right. We're talking today with Mike Maddox and Barbara Larson on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Jim Packard. Sarah Carroll is our on-air producer, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk with Mike Maddox of Rock County UW Extension and Barbara Larson of Kenosha County UW Extension about gardening. And if you'd like to join in, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. We've talked about several opportunities to get together and share information on gardening. Let me just mention one other event that is not necessarily gardening, but does sound like fun, and that's Sprecher Brewing Company hosting a Taste and Learn session of Tasting Synergies Dispelling Myths, Wednesday evening, March 25th. That would be next Wednesday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. at the brewery. And we've got Sarah Hill, who's the Culinary Director of Cheese Education for the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, Lucy Saunders, author of three cookbooks, including The Best of American Beer and Food, and Randy Sprecher, founder and head brewmaster at Sprecher Brewing. And they will pair some Wisconsin artisanal cheeses with award-winning beers. And you can find out information, make your reservations if you'd like, at SprecherBrewery.com, or you can call 414-964-2739. It's SpreckerBrewery.com or 414-964-2739. Let's go back to the phones to Mike in Reedsburg next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Say, we plant a garden every year, and I can already see them out there. We have a terrible problem with moles. Ever we've tried the thumbprint things in the ground. We've tried putting the pellets in the ground. We tried rat poisoning. And we even had somebody told us we should put gum in there, and my 7-year-old swears he saw the mole sticking his head out of the ground blowing bubbles. So,
be diligent. When you do anything for animal control, you need to not give up. You need to switch different tactics, and you just need to keep up with it. It's not going to be solved in one fell swoop. And what you're doing, with the exception of maybe the gum, sounds like you're on the right track for moles. You can try walking on the tunnels as you see them to collapse them. That's going to discourage them from wanting to live there. You can try the harpoon traps. That's the lethal way of managing it, where you put a trap over the hole, and when it walks through and triggers it, it's harpooned and it's killed. You can try the baits, though, mm-hmm. and baits work, right?
Yeah. I'd be real careful because of pets and kids and that kind of thing.
You know, and so what you're doing is you got to just stay on top of that, and hopefully you outpersist them. Yeah.
By the way, I have heard the gum one, but it's juicy fruit gum.
Only juicy fruit.
Yeah, I have no idea whether it works or not, but I have heard that one before. Yeah. So maybe it's the problem that you use bubble gum instead.
Maybe, because there was bubble gum, and I didn't know there was a certain brand of gum that they like. So maybe I should try that.
Yeah, I would just say, as Mike says, you just got to keep after it. So
okay. All right, thank you so much.
All right, Mike, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And Marilyn in Greendale is next. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm wondering if it's possible to root a cutting from, I did some pruning, and I have a dogwood, a red twig dogwood that was getting out of hand, and I wanted to trim it and wondered if I could, instead of putting it in the recycle pile, if I could just stick it in the ground, would it take root?
It should. Dogwood, especially those red twig dogwoods, are pretty easy
to root in the recycle pile.
Yeah.
That's how easy they were.
I was just cutting some from my bushes today because I do this as a class because I'm thinking this is the guinea pig. If I can get them to root dogwood cuttings, I'm building confidence in my master garden students, and they'll be able to do everything. And then I tell them, if they can't do this, give it up, because they should be that easy to root. What you need to do is take about a pencil size piece, maybe a little bit longer. You don't want it too big, but about a pencil size piece. Put it so the buds are facing up and the part that was closest to the roots go down into the soil. You can use a little bit of root hormone on there, but Barb, do they even need that? No.
Nope.
You can put it directly in the ground, but I know in my yard, my ground's still frozen. So I'm just going to take a container of potting soil and stick it in there, and I'm going to leave it outside. And just leave them outside, let them root outside, and you should get some.
Yeah. You can even do more. If you got a good-sized pot, put more than one in a pot. So, yeah, they're very, very easy to root.
Great. Great. Thank you much.
All right, Marilyn, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And if you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.com. lasagna.org. Let's take some emails. Peg says, I've just looked at the lasagna garden of our farm, Wisconsin, which is of great interest. Picture captions say that hay is spread. Is it hay or straw? What would you do in a situation like that?
If it's hay or straw, well, straw is going to have less weed seed
in it, I believe,
but it's also going to have more carbon, so there'd be a lot more of the browns you're adding. I think hay is going to have some weed, and it's going to be a little greener, so
right.
It'd be more nitrogen
in it. So I don't know. I was going to say, it's his website. My mm-hmm. guess is there's an email that you can email him and ask him. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. There's the answer.
And now we'll have to go look at the website, too.
I know.
Marcy says she has some upright junipers that grow on either side of a garden entrance. Rabbits have made a buffet of them this mm-hmm. winter. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's possible they'll fill back in?
Anything's possible. But it's the repeating answer for the day. Junipers are one of those plants with a green shell, brown interior. And once that green exterior is gone, did I say that in reverse?
Yeah.
Green shell, brown interior, yeah. Excuse me. That once that green shell is gone, it may or may not come back. So it depends.
Just keep watch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would just watch. And if the real damage is down on the bottom of the tree around the trunk and they've girdled it, basically stripped the bark off of it.
You're doomed.
You're doomed.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Donna in Madison next. Hello, Donna.
Hi there. I used to staff and run the poison center at UW, and when I heard you mention toxic plants list, I thought maybe I could direct you to my toxic plants. If people want to go to www.uwhealth.org/poison, under educational materials, you will find my common plants, what's toxic and what's not, in English and in Spanish.
Excellent.
Hey.
I think I've actually stumbled on that at one time.
I feel guilty not for having that one bookmarked. I would much rather send people to Wisconsin Resources.
So that's uwhealth.org/poison.
Correct.
And then
under educational materials.
Educational materials would be what you're looking for there. And then you'll find list in English and in Spanish.
Nice.
Right.
Email us your link. We want to be sure to get that on our websites.
And also, if people are looking for their pets,
yes,
mm-hmm. A lot of plants that are harmless to people, of course, can be a problem with kitty cats and what have you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But ASPCA on their website has a link to the Animal Poison Center, which has lots of plant lists specific for animals.
Donna, you're a godsend.
Hey, that's what I do for a living.
Thanks, Donna. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's go on to Tim in Kenosha next. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I've got a kind of a restored prairie situation, and I'm getting a lot of bird's foot trefoil.
Mm-hmm.
And I do burning and that sort of thing, and it doesn't seem to want to set it back. I've used a little bit of Roundup, spot treatment, and that doesn't seem to quite do it. I'm wondering if you could recommend anything that would be specific to legumes like birdfoot trefoil.
Actually, what you have mentioned is what I normally see for control when you're reestablishing a prairie area.
My question is, and this can apply to all weeds, when people say they sprayed something and it didn't work, a lot of times the timing of your application can mm-hmm. make a difference. If you typically spray something when it's in peak flower, it's going to be weaker and might be more susceptible. And if you spray things in the latter half of the growing season, it can be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
When you're spraying things in the spring, it's got a lot of energy going up into the leaves. They might be some initial dieback, and then they regrow from the root. But when you do things when it's flowering, it's weak and be more susceptible. And when things are sprayed in the latter half of the growing season, it's more likely to be translocated to the root and killed there.
Right, yeah. And so I don't know when you're doing it. And then, of course, the other key is that it needs to be an active growth whenever you're doing any kind of spray, because herbicides just don't work if the plant's not actively growing. So I would say continue with that spot treatment. I don't know how often you're burning. You don't want to burn real often, because that's a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Some of that canopy of those native plants actually helps to reduce those invasives too.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right, Tim. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. And let's go to Marcia in Racine next. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. I have two questions. First, I have a 2-year-old star jasmine plant that I bring in the winter and put out in the summer. And this winter, it has gotten very leggy. And I'm wondering how much I should prune and when.
We just gave each other two very stumped looks because so much depends on actually seeing your plant, I would say.
Well, and the other reason I thought is here you're actually talking to two who do more outdoor planting stuff than indoor kinds of things in the tropicals. And most of these, I think, safely, you could probably go back a quarter to a third of the length. Mm-hmm. Make sure you cut back to where you have a side bud or shoot or leaf coming out, which is called a node. And shape it and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. But
yeah, or you can wait till it starts putting on some new growth again and then start cutting it back. I'm always hesitant doing that myself because personally, even with all my training, I kill houseplants. And I really don't like giving advice because I've killed more than I've saved. but what Barb said, cut it back to a node will be good. Maybe a little fertilizer too now. Start mm-hmm. pushing some more growth on it, more light. And you should be fine.
Yeah, and if I was going to prune, I would do it shortly before I start to, well, actually acclimate it to get outside mm-hmm. and then do it at that point because then it's going to start actively growing again.
Well, the problem is it's already got flowering buds on it, mm-hmm. and I don't want to cut those off.
Well, and you may sacrifice. I mean, yeah. Some of that, you have to decide what you want.
Can't have it all.
Okay, and one other question. We had our yard professionally landscaped 3 years ago, and there are two small arborvita evergreens in the front that have been brown. They've had brown interior since they were planted. And I was told that it was probably transplant shock and it should get better, but it hasn't.
Brown interior would be normal. As long as that outside is still green, you're okay.
And thanks very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. On Garden Talk, we're talking with Mike Maddox and Barbara Larson, and we will be happy to take your calls coming up after the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. Glad to have you with us today as we talk with Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Mike, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
And Barbara Larson, Horticulture Educator for Kenosha County UW Extension at Bristol. And Barb, thanks very much for being here today.
I'm happy to be here.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, our lines are full at the moment, but the number for you is 800-642-1234, and let's go right back to the phones to Frank in Cedarburg. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. I have a question. Do you know what's coming in April? Codling moths. What's a good insecticide to use to get rid of codling moths?
Actually, for your apple trees or
yes,
fruit trees?
Apple,
yeah.
For...
We have, and, you know, I purposefully don't remember all these insecticides off the top of my head.
Uh-huh.
So we have some excellent publications from the University of Wisconsin Extension. If there's a professional fruit tree or spray guide, so a commercial fruit tree or spray guide, and there's also a fairly new one for homeowners that give you both the spray options and non-chemical options too. And those are all at that learning store. UWEX.edu website, and if you just go for fruits and in there, you can get it or order them.
Or you can call your county extension office and they can assist you in getting it.
I will do that. Now, I have another question. Some time ago, Mr. Goldman had talked about tomato plants and getting an awful lot of tomatoes. By any chance, do you have any idea what variety he's got that he used?
Oh, Irwin Goldman when he was on here?
And
there's no, I missed that show. I have no clue which one he was talking about.
I see. Okay.
All right.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
No,
we don't have an answer for you on this one, Frank.
No.
Thanks very much, though. We appreciate hearing from you. Jim in Blue River has some thoughts about lingonberries. Hi, Jim.
Good noon. I've been raising lingonberries for about 15 years. And they take a very acid soil.
Mm-hmm.
I have them in my blueberry bed, and they get along real well. in the mulchum. They're also shallow rooted, so they need water when the weather gets dry. And I top dress them with ammonium sulfate each spring before the rains start.
Right, right.
They're a beautiful little plant. They flower nicely, and they actually extend with their root system. Mm-hmm. But as far as production, you can forget it.
They're not a good candidate.
They have nice flowers, and once in a while I'll see a berry, and I just, when my Norwegian friends brag, I just don't say much. I'm zone 4, and I think you're just too far south.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And the other is we, in the southern part of the state, we generally do not have the acidic enough soil, so we can't grow blueberries and lingonberries and all those kinds of things. So,
Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And on to Jeff in Mount Horeb. Hello, Jeff.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Wondering if either of the guests know about the efficacy of using tree shelters on little tiny year-old bare root stock. I'm going to line out probably 100 white pines, and I just know that the deer are going to get after them right away. And I was just wondering if these tree shelters actually work, and do they have an effect on the growth of the tree?
Well, I know you're going to need to do something because, you know, you've nailed it. The deer are going to come out, or some other critter is going to come through and eat them, and you just need to protect them. As for the tree shelters, there's so many options out there. You're going to have to experiment, I think, on what works. I've heard of some people using them, and it almost gets too hot in there, and it can cause some problems, but then you're out. The jury's out. I don't really have one opinion on them, but
And I don't either. I've not used them. I've not really talked to many people that have. Yeah. So what you could do the research for us and then let us know.
Yeah.
You know, the research that's out there tends to be from people that are peddling them.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. That's what if you try different ones and then you can let Mike and I know.
Yeah. You do the unbiased.
That's right.
You know, just use some common sense. If they're black, they're going to get hot.
Yeah.
And that heat can really hurt the tree. You're going to need something that's going to secure around them so other critters don't get in. Because in addition to deer, you're going to find rabbits and voles and other things that like to nibble on trees. There's just not one good answer. You're going to have to see if they work. And they may work for you. And the guy down the street from you who uses them may swear them off. It's one of those type of things.
Okay. All right. Yep. Thanks very much.
All right, Jeff. All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate your call.
My dad did try wrapping his little trees in aluminum foil. Don't do that. That just blows off and blows everywhere. It's just a mess. I was embarrassed to go home. So,
all right. The call-in number for you to join the conversation is 800-642-1234 for Garden Talk. And on to Ron in Madison. Hi, Ron. Ron, are you there? All right. Apparently got called away. Heidi in Toma, let's give you a chance. Hi, Heidi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We just built a house probably about 4 years ago on old farmland. It was an alfalfa field. And the grass has done okay so far, but I've got this weed that I thought was rhubarb. And my neighbor said, no, it's not rhubarb. It was another name. It has a very, very long taproot. I probably dug down about 3 or 4 feet, and I couldn't get rid of the thing. And I've tried putting Roundup on it. I can't get it to die. And now I'm finding it popping up in other parts of my yard.
Based on your description there, I'm thinking burdock.
Yeah, that's what I guessed too. Is that what they told you it was?
Yes.
Well, technically it's edible. You can pull it up and eat the root.
Wow.
So people have told me that. I've not tried it myself.
Uh-huh.
But as for control, you know, you can continue to try to pull it. And again, try to get as much root as you can. And then for any of the little suckers that come up from the root, as we have talked about, is if you do try to control it chemically, it's always better to do it in the latter half of the year in order for that chemical to be translocated to the root system and to kill that taproot. But it is going to be a sizable taproot.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I'm not even finding them as suckers, though. I'm finding them individual out
right. in the yard.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's what you'll find. And but we're back to, like we've mentioned before, make sure they're in active growth. Make sure that you cut them off or pull them off so that you don't have seed production, so you don't spread mm-hmm. it anymore. And then I would particularly kind of work on using herbicides in probably August to early September. Like Mike mentioned, that's when the plants are pulling their nutrients back down into their root system, and they pull the herbicide down in at that point too, and then you get a much better kill.
So then until August, when I can do that, do I just keep cutting it off as I see
I'm that's what I would do.
Because what you're doing is, if you keep cutting it back, you're reducing the leaves. Those leaves spend all that time making sugars that are feeding the taproot. If you deprive it of food and starve it, it's just going to be that much weaker of a plant when you turn around later in the growing season and try to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Heidi. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. Robert emails that he has owned his home for 4 years, and each year the crabgrass has spread and grown worse. What is his remedy?
A condo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First of all, let's see if it is crabgrass first. Bring in a sample, get it ID'd, and if it is crabgrass, then the best treatment for crabgrass is a good, healthy lawn. If you get your other species growing, your Kentucky bluegrass and your other lawn components, it will outcompete the crabgrass. The other thing you can do is in the spring, typically about the time those forsythia start blooming, you have your crabgrass pre-emergent on by then. That pre-emergent will keep those seeds from germinating, because crabgrass is an annual, and that will help reduce your crabgrass through the year. But again, your key thing for crabgrass control is a good, healthy lawn.
And make sure you mow, you keep the height of the lawn no shorter than about 3 inches, because then that helps shade out those crabgrass seeds. So mm-hmm. mow high, don't overwater. Like Mike said, keep it all nice and healthy.
All right. Thanks very much for that question. Jeff from Little Chute says, Jerry says that my husband and I have land and plan to build on it in the future. There's a small stream that forms during the wetter times of the year at the back of the 7 acres, and until last year, about half of this land was used for planting corn. What can I start to plant this year that is least likely to be wasted if we have a dry summer, as I'm not able to do much watering? There's no well there, and I live about 40 minutes away.
Were they wanting herbaceous stuff, trees, shrubs? Otherwise, my thought is go get some dogwood cuttings and go stick them in the area.
And I guess my thought is, this sounds more like an agricultural kind of question. What do you want in alternative to corn for that? And I don't know whether things like alfalfa and some of that, we're back to, I don't know that this is a horticultural question much as a agriculture question. Maybe call your local agent.
We need more information. I think it's actually a discussion we have over a phone versus just a quick answer over the radio to do it right.
Here's a quick question. How do I keep weeds out of my asparagus patch?
I've heard a lot of different ways of doing that. Probably the best way to do it, to handle your weeds, is go out there now and pull any mm-hmm. remnant of things, what you would see. Some of the pre-emergents are labeled for use now, and you could use that. And I've heard this thing about salt, too.
You've heard it, but you're not giving it out as advice, I would hope. But never use salt. It really will ruin the quality of your soil. But as Mike said, I would definitely pull anything you can, hand pull, and then mulch. The problem with weeds in asparagus is that it's better to prevent rather than deal with them mm-hmm. afterwards. So if it's a really, really bad weed infestation, you actually might be better off kind of restarting the patch.
Yeah, but put your mulch down now would help mm-hmm. smother the weeds that would be there, and your asparagus would grow up through them.
Okay. Debbie in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning. I have an old raspberry bed, kind of a combination of the fall-bearing gold ones and the spring bears, or the June bears. And over the years, it's gotten increasingly more scraggly. The rabbits have done some damage. It's still bearing, but nowhere near as much as it used to.
Mm-hmm.
Should I just
dig up the whole works and redo it, or is there something I can do to improve it?
You could hire people to come in and do that. That'd be the easiest way. But yeah, yeah, I think you got the right plan. You just need to rejuvenate, mm-hmm. start it over, dig up the plants that you want to keep, start new rows, start new mounds, however you want to do it, and do some major thinning on your plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if it's a really old patch. I mean, you could go through, I don't know if you regularly are pruning your patch to encourage new sprouts on it, but if it's a really old patch, you definitely would be better probably starting all over again.
The fall bears, the gold ones, are still doing fairly well, and I prune them back almost to ground level mm-hmm. in the spring. It's the June bears
that
are really suffering.
And so you probably might be better off just taking those out and then replanting, getting new June bearing ones.
Can I hire you guys to come up and dig them out?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Debbie, thanks for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. On to Vince in, is it Johnson Creek? Vince?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. This is Vince from Door County.
Door County.
Yes, sir. I have a couple peony trees that are growing, and they're flourishing, and every year they're getting bigger and bigger. And I've noticed the last couple years when the flowers die off in the fall, that I'm getting a big bud, and they're filled with seeds. Last year, I tried germinating the seeds, and I had no success. Is there any way of restarting those seeds?
Do you mean something other than peony by chance? Like maybe magnolia?
No, it's a Japanese peony tree.
Okay, tree peonies, but they bloom in spring.
Oh, yes. No. The bloom is in the spring.
Oh, but you had the seed pod in the fall. On my Japanese tree peonies, I always trim those cut those seed pods out. So deadhead it after the flowers are done. So cut those off back to the, where the main leaves start to come out. And those, a lot of the tree peonies are actually grafted. So, and they're many of them are very highly hybridized. So, even if you could get it to germinate, odds are you wouldn't get the same thing anyway.
Okay, you wouldn't. Yeah.
No.
I mean, every year the blooms just get bigger and bigger.
Right.
I've had them in the ground for maybe 5 years now.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're just enormous.
Right.
And I've been leaving the pot on there hoping that I'd be able to get the seeds to germinate.
No, I wouldn't even bother with that.
Okay, so go ahead and just cut them off as soon as they're
right.
done budding or flowering.
Correct.
And go from there.
Right.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks very much. And if you'd like to join in, we've got a few minutes left. The number for you, 800-642-1234. And Patty in Almond is next. Hi, Patty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about moving my strawberries. I garden a large amount of... I have a large amount of gardens, a little more than an acre, and so all I do all summer is weed. And what I'd like to do is to move my strawberries, the ones that live from the weeds, and move them to either my asparagus patch or my blueberry patch to put them underneath those plants. What do you guys think?
I don't know about anything about using them as a kind of a cover crop in those areas.
I guess I'm thinking asparagus might be too dense to mm-hmm. have your strawberries really grow and produce in there very much. The canopy might be too thick or too heavy for it. Maybe around the outside might work. Blueberries, I guess my concern with that is since blueberries like really acidic soil, whether or not there would be a soil compatibility problem, because mm-hmm. strawberries will tolerate a little higher pH, certainly into the neutrals, kind of 7 pH. So I think this is in one of those categories where, I don't know that I would say, definitely don't do it, but I don't know how successful it would be.
You're going to be doing an experiment. One of the other things you might want to look at, too, is how you're growing your strawberries, if weeding is a problem. If you're not doing it already, you might want to look at kind of a matted system where you're mm-hmm. just growing a bunch of them really tightly together. That'll help suppress some of the weeding that needs to be done because you'll be adding mulch to it too. And then when it gets too out of control, you pretty much just renovate with a tiller.
Okay.
Or mowing. And we have a really good publication on growing strawberries in Wisconsin that can illustrate that method for you.
Well, that sounds really great. Thanks very much.
All right, yeah. Patty, thanks for the call. And let's go to Wayne next in Union Grove. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, I got an answer for Mike on his moles in the ground.
Yes.
If you can get a hold of camphor beans, they in South Florida, they grow wild. You can't get them up north. Just drop the camphor beans down the hole. It will kill them. I have proven examples of that at Haven Ready. And you can pull them off the Internet someplace from getting a hold of camphor beans. They are poisonous, but you can get a hold of those. Also, on the asparagus, to get rid of the weeds in it, you must mulch with straw. If you don't mulch them, the weeds will come right straight through, and you got to be careful of quackgrass.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got quackgrass, you might just well start all over.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Wayne, thanks very much. We love to hear from you. And let's go to Steve in Green Bay next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have land out by La Crosse that I'm going to be building my home on this year. And it's all hardwoods there. It's all nice mature oaks. My question for you is, I'd like to plant some like spruce or pines to block my home from the road. And I'm wondering what could handle the shade like that, because the canopy is so thick there. Obviously, I'm going to have to do some clearing for the home,
mm-hmm.
but I like to leave it as natural as I can. And like I said, there's not going to be that much sun breaking through, but I would still like to have those kind of trees to block the house.
I'm making the assumption you don't have it so thick with buckthorn that it's doing the job for you for screening, which in that case, it's a good thing. As for a good understory screen, boy, the examples I can think of could only wind up doubling as deer food.
Well, and what I'm thinking of is what will tolerate the shade,
mm-hmm.
and the only evergreens or conifers that tend to tolerate shade are arborvitaes will take it,
mm-hmm.
yews will take it, and hemlocks will take it. The yews and hemlocks especially are real, you know, deer favorites. So mm-hmm. I don't know that you have a lot of options. Certainly things like spruce and pine really prefer full sun.
Yeah.
So we haven't got real good options for you on this one.
No, and since you are wanting, and this wasn't your question, but I'm just going to throw it in here. If you're going to be doing construction around your trees and building a new home, you need to get an arborist out there to help advise you about preserving trees for construction mm-hmm. damage. I get called onto properties too often to see damaged trees that could have been saved with a little preventative education to you and your contractors in order to preserve them. And what you have for options on after the damage is done is almost always removal.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And then one more question, please.
Yeah.
What about for a lawn for grass? What kind of grass can handle that much shade?
When you go into for a walk in the woods, do you see a lot of grass growing under your trees?
It's all thick leaves that are down, and there's lots of ferns.
Grass likes full sun. They have shade mixes that have a lot of fine fescues in there that are tolerant to shade, but they're not going to give you that full lush football field type grass that everybody likes in their lawn. You have to let go of that whole green grass concept when you're going to be living in that much shade.
Yeah, I was going to say, enjoy the oaks and all that wonderful, you know, trees that you've got, and look at, you know, maybe just the small space around your house where you've got it opened a little bit that you could grow turf grass there. And otherwise, use things like natives and other kinds of things that will take that shade. And, enjoy the shade that you've mm-hmm. got.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Steve. Thank you very much for the call. And let me ask you one more question before we have to close off. And is this the time, or is it still too early to start seeds, let's say, for vegetables for transplanting outdoors?
I've got my onions going. They like that.
Well, certainly those of us that live in southern Wisconsin, since we're looking at things like if early May or so for our average last frost date, kind of count back and we're about 6 weeks or so, you can certainly start things like tomatoes, peppers, some of those kinds of things. But you need to look at when's your average frost date, last frost date in your part of Wisconsin.
All right. Thank you so much for being here today. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and the Director of Education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Glad to be here.
And Barbara Larson, Horticulture Educator for Kenosha County UW Extension. You'll find her in her office in Bristol, Wisconsin, when the weather isn't nice. Otherwise, she'll be out.
I wish I was out more often
in the countryside. And coming up on Monday, Apple Computers and Accessories with Joe Rhodes of Madison, and then Digital Cameras with Jack Socia.